Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesh and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesh and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesh.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley, and we are glad you are with us. Our show is brought to you each week by Flesh and Beck Law. You can check out the website, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. And their number, 303-806-8886. And always good to have our good friend, Kevin Flesh, in studio. How are you, sir?
I'm good. In the midst of the summer. The smoke is a little strange, but otherwise.
It is. I mean, it's crazy these last few days, especially.
Yeah.
Very thick.
Very thick. And, you know, it is. It's We were talking off air before we started the show about sort of what's going on with this. And I have my own personal theories. And my personal theory is that the reason that we're having all of these horrible fires in the mountains and in our forests is because it just hasn't been managed very well. Mm-hmm. It's like anything else. And so when you get our forests in such bad shape, the fires are more significant because there's more fuel.
But
And it's not... I don't think it's much related to the environmental impact or changing climate and that sort of thing. I mean, you've been here a long time.
We've been here since 93 now, so I've seen it.
Yeah, so I've been here since 96, and I remember taking my bar exam. It's the beginning or middle part of July when it's always 100 degrees. You know, that's just that's what I remember about sort of the beginning and the middle of July in Denver is that we have these days, we're in high 90s and 100s, but now you get this extra sort of people say, oh my gosh, look at all the numbers of warm weather. Well, no, it's always been that way. But now we have the smoke that makes us crazy, and it's strange. But hopefully this will pass, and we'll actually get, it would be really nice to have somebody manage the forest.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my second career after I finish.
Exactly.
Being a lawyer is I'm going to go be a forest manager. I'd love to do that.
We'll start you a campaign.
And, that's right.
Hey, we'll get it done.
Maybe I should have a little bit of training other than just staying in a Holiday Inn on the weekend and saying that I'm a forester.
But. Exactly. Well, again, our show is brought to you by Kevin's law firm, which is Flesh and Beck Law. And each week we just try to bring you different thoughts and ideas with criminal law, personal injury law. Sometimes we do things on contracts, just things that will help you in the legal field that just try to help you keep from getting into a bind in any way, shape, or form. And today we're going to talk about a little bit, Kevin, with personal injury and all, just kind of what people can expect. You know, I mean, most of us, unfortunately, have sat with you or a PI attorney through our life because of an accident, but many haven't. And so just wanted to kind of, as you meet with people in that initial consultation, which I guess we can start there, how consultation works, but just kind of setting expectations of what this whole process is like when you get an attorney and you've been in a wreck.
Yeah, it's one of those things, certainly for this program and the things we try to do here is give people information so that they're more knowledgeable when they get into a situation where they're like, ooh, you know, I've kind of heard about this, and just so that we raise issues that you need to be thinking about. So in an initial consultation with a prospective client, what I'm really looking for is I need specific details relating to what happened, when it happened, how the accident happened, who's at fault, with that at-fault party, whether or not they have insurance. Because a lot of times people forget that you can sue anybody, right? But it's whether or not that person has any assets that you can collect. I've got a drawer full of judgments on people that they just don't have anything, and so there's no way to really go after them. I mean, people work, and you can go through the garnishment process, and sometimes people have real property that we can attach liens to, and then you just sort of wait for them to
try to do something with it.
Yeah, sell the property. Most people have mortgages on their property, so when you put a lien on it, you're in first or second or third position relating to those mortgages. So the conversation that I begin with people is I want to understand what exactly happened, and that takes some time to develop. I ask questions, and it's always interesting in It's always interesting to me what people think is important in the way of details relating to the accident. Because sometimes they get into minute details that have nothing to do with liability, for example.
Right.
You know, they tell me about all of the circumstances and how difficult the other person was, or the police took longer than they should have. I've got a client right now who wants me to sue the city of Aurora because they never investigated the accident, because he believes that the person that hit him had a DUI, and he's been on TV stations and talking about it. And that's important, I mean, in the sense of what we can gather for information. But is the city of Aurora causing him more injury because they didn't show up? I don't know. But at any rate, so I have spent a lot of time talking with people just in general about how the accident happened and what's important in regards to how it happened, who is primarily at fault. Could they be the person that's talking to me that's the victim in the case? Could they also have some culpability? And then finding out about insurance. And a lot of people have had a phone call yesterday. A woman said, I have full coverage. I said, good. Okay. So tell me about what that means to you, because it means something different for
absolutely.
Everybody, right?
And rarely does it mean full coverage.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what I found out in this. Yeah. So the fun part of my job is listening to people's stories and trying to help them. The sort of frustrating parts at times is people having assumptions about certain evidence that is or isn't true. So this is a good example. She says full coverage. I say, great. All right. So tell me about, have you made a claim with your insurance company? Well, no, I haven't done that. Well, I said, the other party you think didn't have insurance, is that right? Yes, that's what, and they got ticketed for no insurance. I said, okay. So I said, did the other party have, were they in their own vehicle? Because maybe the owner of the vehicle is different than the driver. Sure enough, different owner of the vehicle. Driver didn't have insurance. Maybe the owner of the vehicle has insurance. All right, well, so that's one pile of money that we maybe can go after. I said, all right, but it sounds like it's going to be a minimal policy. And she was pretty injured. So, in other words, she had been to the ER and had some testing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm already looking at medical bills that are beyond probably a $25,000 policy.
Right.
Explain that to her. And then we start talking about coverages. So we start talking about what sort of coverage full coverage means to her. And she explains to me then, she pulls up her GEICO app, which a lot of times you can get stuff on, and I say, okay, I'm looking for the declarations page, and what I'm looking for is tell me the coverages that you have. And so she kind of went through the coverages, bodily injury, collision. I said, all right, well, how about MedPay? MedPay is important, especially early on in the process in a car accident, because that is an asset or something that you can use. Normally it's $5,000 up to $100,000. I mean, I've had clients with the USAA that had $100,000 of medical payments. And that's the idea that you can use that for your medical payments while you're treating. It's really helpful for a lot of people because most people don't have savings to pay for co-pays and other things.
Sure.
So I asked her about the MedPay. This is full coverage again. Said, MedPay. Nope, I declined MedPay. Okay. So no MedPay. How about underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage? She said, I don't know what that is. I said, all right. So then, I mean, and it's important, and it's the same reason that we have these shows, is because I want people to understand when you go out and buy insurance, you're not only just looking for the cheapest coverage, but you're also looking for as many coverages as possible mm-hmm. for an inexpensive price. And underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage is so important.
Right.
Right.
But don't you think because so many agents are out there and realize everybody's trying to get the lowest price possible that, you know, they're not a fiduciary in this case.
They're not
doing what's best for the client. They're just saying the best, lowest price
right.
they can get them to try to get them to sign.
Exactly.
Right?
And what is actually, I think, happening the majority of the time is people aren't actually talking to a human being at all.
You're right.
They're just going on the websites and trying to compare. And in buying insurance, especially relating to car insurance, is really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talk about it all the time, but even when we talk about it, I've got to ask other questions because, for example, okay, it turns out she didn't have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage, she doesn't think. So then the next question is, because in Colorado, under the statute, you have the ability to attach to underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage of a family member that's living with you at the time of the accident. So then we have that conversation. And sure enough, she's living with another family member, and they may have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. But she needs to go find that out. So those are the sorts of discussions that we have in the initial consultation so that we get our arms around the idea of how much we have to deal with in the way of assets or the way of places that we can make a claim towards. Because the worst case scenario is the one that we've talked about in the past, where you get a car accident where the person that hits you has minimum limits, $25,000 limits. You're driving a car with your family of five. Everyone is hurt. You have $100,000 or $150,000 in medical expenses for your family. You don't have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage, and all you have is $25,000 to recover. Just settled a case this morning. My client is badly injured, has a lot of medical bills. We couldn't get Progressive was the insurance. We couldn't get Progressive to pay the policy limits off the bat from our demand. So we file suit. The defendant promptly files bankruptcy. So it stops our lawsuit temporarily. And then I get a call from Progressive saying, will you take the limits? Sure, now that your policyholder has filed bankruptcy, that's the only thing I have left. Mm-hmm. And so now they've tendered the limits. But now we've got to figure out whether or not our client has underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. So those are all the things that we sort of talk about at the beginning, liability, and then what we have for in the way of coverages so that we then have a good sense of where we can go. Wow. Another example of a case that just the opposite. So I've got a case right now where we thought we had moderate limits, $100,000. In my client was really badly injured. She actually got hit twice in the vehicle. She got hit an initial accident, was on the side of the road sort of trying to figure out her injuries, and then another car hit her. Awful situation. So the second car we thought had $100,000 in limits, and we made our demand for a lot of, she's got medical expenses of $500,000. I mean, it's really unfortunate as to what happened to my client. But so we make because we never know exactly what the limits are going to be. The legislature 2 years ago has given us the opportunity through DORA to figure out now by petitioning before we file suit to get some limits information. So we're able to do some of that work. But in this particular case, there was not only his auto policy, but he had an umbrella as well. So we've got lots of limits in that case.
Gotcha.
But we didn't know that early on.
Sure.
And so we were really concerned that we may have a situation that we may only have had 100,000, but turns out we've got a lot more. So now the case has become a little bit more complicated because we want to make sure that we get her fully compensated for her injuries. And so we're still looking at limits, most likely.
Sure.
But those are the sorts of conversations you want to have early on so that you can figure out what makes the most sense for your situation with regard to treatment and what you can expect in the way of resolution of the case and whether or not, you know, sometimes we get into situations where liability is an issue. For example, I've got a couple of cases right now where the individual has been cited, my client has been cited, and most lawyers won't take those sorts of cases on because as soon as they think that the police have made the right decision in citing the people in general, and they're more difficult cases to get settled. And so, but those are still cases we look at.
Sure.
Because sometimes
there's a mistake.
There is. Yeah. There is. I mean, and because we do the criminal defense side of the practice, I'm not concerned about going to trial because the trials can be really helpful sometime in gathering information that proves our theory of how the accident happened. And in those cases, I've now got a transcript from the trial in the criminal context that will help me get what I need from the civil side in the way of resolution of the case with the claims adjuster after they review those transcripts.
All right. You're listening to Legal Talk. Kevin Flesh is with us. Once again, it's Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. So, of course, you look at new injuries that might have been sustained during the accident, but do you also get into maybe past accidents and past medical issues?
Yeah, those are really important as well because that's another opportunity for the defense to try to make the argument that, first of all, if you were still treating for a prior injury and you get into a new car wreck, we have that happen every once in a while where you've gotten into a car wreck, you're treating, and a year or two down the road, you're still treating for that accident, but you get another one. It really complicates.
How does that work?
Yeah. So what's sort of counterintuitive is sometimes clients, sometimes they don't want to tell me about that. And it's like, well,
like you're not going to find out.
Yeah, insurance companies have databases for this sort of thing. So you don't have to tell me about it, but the defense is going to know when you make a claim on the second case. But what's important is sometimes people also think, oh, well, if I go to a different doctor for this second accident, then that treatment won't be found out. And that's just not the case either. Mm-hmm. And it makes you look like you're trying to hide something.
Right.
My best advice for that sort of situation is continue to treat with the doctor that you've been at, because they can then give us an opinion, what's called an apportionment. And doctors can say, well, this is what I saw for injuries in accident one.
And we were making progress,
yep,
or whatever.
Exactly. You know? And you were 75. They'll normally put a percentage on how far along you were in your treatment. And that will help you then determine how much of an aggravation or how much that additional treatment is related to that second accident. And that is really helpful, because that's the best way to sort of get things resolved. Because if you don't do that, then it's the old pointing the fingers. The defense lawyers in both cases will be pointing at each other, sure, and it makes it really difficult to resolve the cases.
Now, witnesses to an accident, are those a pretty small percentage where people say, oh, they come in, they've got, you know, three names and phone numbers for people that were a witness?
Witness testimony can be really beneficial depending upon what it is. I mean, it's like anything else, right? So eyewitness testimony is probably the most dynamic part of a case because it can be so different depending upon the perspective of the witness and whether or not, first of all, whether or not they have any reason to make things up. So for example, you're suing a person for rear-ending you, and one of the witnesses is another passenger in the other person's car. Maybe they have a relationship somehow. That person obviously, most likely is going to try to side with their friend that was driving. It's very unusual that they would say, yeah, that the other person, you know, was just completely negligent. So witness testimony can be really beneficial. I had a case recently. It was a really interesting case in the sense that it was my client was rear-ended, or actually she was turning left. And the issue was whether or not she had the right to be turning left where she was, because there was another person coming the opposite direction that may or may not have had a through lane, and whether or not they were, because they got ticketed initially. And there were some witnesses around in that area. In particular, there was a witness that my client had had some interactions with a few miles before, and sort of, not a road rage, but it was just an uncomfortable situation. And so there was an example of where this person said my client was going too fast, that they were the ones at fault, because they had an axe to grind with how exactly they had interactions with my client prior in the same. So they weren't going to be making any money on it,
right,
but they were wanting to sort of stick it to my client. And it was one of those situations where that was going to be a real problem for us at trial. As well, there were some other issues with the case that caused me to have some concerns about what my client really was doing at the time of the accident. And those sorts of things are developed through the litigation process. And sometimes the litigation process, you learn things that are of real advantage to you, and that will help you through the process. But sometimes it does just the opposite, and then you have to sort of pivot and say, we need to figure this out, because if this evidence is true, and in this case, the case that I was talking about, this other witness, if this evidence is true and the person is reasonably credible, we've got a real problem, because now we're fighting a different battle,
okay,
right? We're not on message with your client, the defendant is at fault entirely, caused injury, and look, we need money to compensate us. Now we're fighting about who's really at fault. And that changes the dynamics in a jury trial and what the jury is going to deliberate about. Because if I have to get off of message to start sort of what looks to be like backpedaling to try to fight off a claim that maybe my client was at fault, it always means that the plaintiff gets less money.
Sure.
And so that's why witnesses are really good to know early on and really good to know what exactly they're going to say. And in those situations, it's really helpful to get that testimony in through deposition or something else early on in the process, so you sort of lock them in.
Mm-hmm.
There are other situations where it's not exactly clear. I've got a case right now where we've sued the defendant. We think it's pretty clear liability. And because of that, I want to take the deposition of the defendant. And now the defendant is being somewhat difficult with their insurance counsel to get a deposition scheduled, which could be indicative that they know that they're at fault, which is really helpful. We've got a mediation coming up. Again, the dynamics are such that I think that'll help us garner more money on the back end of this transaction in the sense of a mediation. But you just sort of have to develop that through litigation.
Mm-hmm. So when you're working through with someone and, you know, I imagine it comes up in about the first 20 seconds, what's my case worth?
Yeah.
Is there a, for lack of a better term, like a menu of prices for different, you know, ailments or injuries someone may suffer where you go, hey, look, you know, here's kind of a range, you know, or how do you, because everybody wants to know that.
Right. So, yeah, I'll give you an example of a case right now that I have that I think is an interesting one that sort of talks about the dynamics of people get on Google, and Google has these crazy matrix that somebody has put out on the internet that says this is what your case is worth, which is really interesting because if it was that simple, all you'd have to do is the insurance company would. And we had this a few years ago for small cases where we literally had a computer model that for cases under like $10,000 or $12,000, I had an insurance company that said, let's try this process where you put in three numbers that are within your range. We'll put in three numbers that are within our range of settlement. And if one of those numbers meets, then the case is settled. Super interesting process.
Wow,
no argument about the facts or anything else, just three numbers. And if it comes to a number, then you're settled. And we actually settled a few cases that way. We had to be a little careful about what our low numbers were. But in reality, if we got in the range where they were, then we were able to resolve it. In small cases, it actually was pretty effective. And it's always interesting to me when I've settled cases with certain defense lawyers in town, and you get a relationship with them, and you get a sense of what they value cases at. Generally speaking, as a plaintiff's lawyer, I'm always 10 or 15 or 20% higher in my evaluation of what we think is a reasonable number to resolve the case at versus the defendants and these particular individual lawyers. And so that's good to know, too, because that gives you a sense of what the ballpark is, where you are in what you may be able to resolve a case for. But that just takes time to kind of figure that out. Okay, so the case that I have now, we have a moderate accident. I've got about 22,000 in medical expenses that my client has had. She's had some really interesting sort of concussive symptoms. Didn't actually hit her head on anything in the car, but had balance, sort of vertigo issues, has had to change sort of, she wears glasses, she's had to have some prism glasses, and then also tinnitus in her ears. So the defendant has a $100,000 policy. She has uninsured motorist coverage behind it. So we've got good assets. And it's one of those cases talking about valuation where a lot of times you'd think if she had just gotten about $20,000 in medical expenses and she seems to be back to normal, then that's maybe a 2.5-3 times the meds sort of valuation for her case. But the tinnitus throws me off a little bit because I think, and the eyesight.
Because, son, I have that, and I'm telling you what, it drives you crazy.
It does.
I have a high, and tinnitus can present in several different deals. I have guys that have it that say it sounds like 1,000 locusts in their head. Mine is just a real high-pitched squeal, like you're at a sound thing, and somebody hits that button in it.
Yep, the squelch.
And, son, it's all the time, 24/7.
Right.
And if I think about it long enough when I'm in a quiet, it'll drive you crazy.
Right. No, I agree. I don't have that. But what I have sometimes is going to sleep, I have my head in the pillow, and I can hear my heartbeat. Like the rhythmic heartbeat.
Right.
And that drives me nuts, too. I can't imagine what tinnitus is.
Oh, man.
So the example of, you know, somebody comes in and says, what's my case worth? This is an example where I'm just not sure. Mm-hmm. I do this all the time, but I think the case is a multiplier more than three because of the tinnitus.
I'm telling you.
And the eyes. And so we're probably going to try this case because I don't think defense counsel believes that it's related and that she just got this spontaneously. And I don't think you can get it spontaneously.
No.
I don't. It's from trauma of some sort. And so, you know, another example is I had a case where someone, I think there was they had a car accident. I think they damaged their spleen, so they had to remove their spleen. So my client had to have a surgery to take out a body part. You know, and in that case, it was the same sort of thing. I'm like, wow, what is that? So we did a little research and we resolved the case. Spleen, I can't remember, but it was pretty expensive spleen. I mean, it was like something that they take out of your body, but it was still had some value from the standpoint of what it is that you would articulate. So from the standpoint of valuation, the thing that you have to remember is you've got to have a good message and a good explanation to six people so they all agree with you mm-hmm. about what it is. And so this tinnitus example, I'm thinking about getting something that sounds like a high-pitched squeal or the cicada noise, and I'm going to record like 10 minutes of it. And in my closing, I'm going to put it on the front of the jurors, and we're just going to sit there for 3 minutes. And then I'm going to say, what's that worth to you in the event that you hear it 24/7, the rest of your life?
Rest of your life.
And then I'll have a better sense. With one jury. I mean, you don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think that every case is different, and that's why the initial consultations are so important, because sometimes people come to me late and they can't develop the case the way I'd like if they had come to us early on in the process so that we can get that information and get them treatment that they need to really qualify what exactly has gone on with them. Other times we get in the case late and unfortunately there's just not the valuation there because of their situation or things that they've said. So every case is so different that as much as I'd like to throw people into these categories of this is what your case is worth mm-hmm. in the first meeting, it's just very difficult to do it.
Sure.
And be fair to the client. I mean, I can always tell people, yeah, your case is worth $500,000
right.
and then sign them up. And then we get into the case and we're 10 months or 5 months mm-hmm. from trial. And I say, oh, your case is worth $12,000 because you've done 4,000 in medical bills. And I'm sorry, but my valuation was wrong. Well, that's not helpful for the client either.
Right.
And I think some of that goes on.
Yeah. And, you know, the steps, well, just to kind of wrap this up for today is, number one, call Kevin immediately, all right? Seek medical attention. Call Kevin immediately because the insurance companies are probably going to be calling you in a day or two, three at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to be careful what you say there. And, again, nothing to be dishonest.
No.
Just there's things you don't have to say right now, okay? And you can sit with Kevin. Because I think this is a huge part of this, Kevin, just setting expectations for everybody. You know, get to know the client.
Right.
They get to know what to expect. And then, you know what? It sure makes the process easy when everybody understands.
It does. And people one of the worst things that a client can have is not understanding the process. So when they get to the end, then they're upset because they didn't quite understand what was going on. And we try to set that stage from the get-go so that mm-hmm. they understand everything and what the stages are. And it's a much more pleasant experience for the client.
Absolutely. Kevin, as always, great information. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Legal Talk. Once again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. The website is fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. Give them a call today for your free consult at Flesh and Beck Law. Thanks for being with us. Don't go anywhere. Dr. Ben coming up next.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298-191, Equal Credit Lender.
This is Chris Kane with 303 Roofer. If you have an insurance claim on your roof and want to keep some of that money in your pocket, give us a call and we'll give you a cash bid to replace your roof. You pay insurance every month and now insurance has paid you. It's your money and we understand that. So give us a call at 303-390-1382 or visit our website, 303roofer.com.
KLZ 560, your home station.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery. Now, here's your host, Dan Muir.
And welcome, everybody, to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix, Arizona. I am your host, Dan Muir, and along with me on the phone is the one and only Dr. Ben. Doc, how you doing today?
Oh, loving life. How are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. Okay, so I got to ask you something before we get into all the topics of the day and, you know, what you guys do at the Functional Medicine Centers and all this. Doc, I have a confession to make.
All right. I'm ready. I put up the curtain.
I started exercising.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm very sore. Yep. I've been at it now for a whopping 4 days. Okay. Now, I started off on the exercise, I don't know what you call it, like a stepper or something like that. And sure. So I started with 10 minutes, but now I'm up to 15 minutes. So I think I'm making progress. However, I'm starving all the time. I am just like hungry. Could I have increased my metabolism that much or what's causing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a big part of what we look at is the, as that body starts burning more calories and doing more things, heck yeah, we get hungry. I always think back, Little House on the Prairie, if you remember the show, well, we read all the books to our kids and there was, one of the books, Farmer Boy, it was Laura's end up being her husband, and they would talk about these meals, like lunch. They'd come in from working, and I mean, maybe they're exaggerating, I don't know, but it was like, you know, 8-course meals and pies and, you know, potato, you know, just so much stuff because they were out there working and busting their butt all day long. So here's the deal. If you want to be able to eat a little bit more, ice cream, you know, do some things, you better earn it. You better be working your butt off.
That's true. But I could not believe how my appetite, you know, went up. And I've just, you know, the other thing I'm doing too is like, you know, walking the stairs here at the office. I'm parking at the farthest parking place when I have to go in someplace and walking in at a brisk walk. You know, I'm not just leisurely just walking in, but I'm really trying to do things just to get away from that sedentary, which, as you can tell in my text messages, is a hard word for me to spell, sedentary lifestyle, you know, because I sit all the time. Every job I do, I end up sitting. Now, I know you've got your stand-up desk, but it's hard to stand up when you drive a car for 10 hours a day.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, most people end up sitting for a big part of their life. And they sit at work, and then they come home, and they sit at dinner, and then they sit in front of the TV, and it's just a lot of sedentary activity. And we know the research shows that that is going to be just as problematic to one's health as smoking, as drinking, as all these other lifestyle choices. Sitting is just as problematic. So we know we've got to get up and move. But my recommendation, Dan, if you need to, you can have some of the handicap rails put in your bathroom. So when your legs are so sore from working out and you need to go to the bathroom, you can hold on to those rails. So.
I think I might have those installed. I think that's a great idea. Really good idea. Okay, Doc, tell us about functional medicine and the functional medicine centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix.
Absolutely. So, like you said, we have offices all around the country. We're getting ready to expand even more. We'll be having these functional medicine centers throughout the country and really bringing it to the masses, because this type of medicine is what America, what the world really needs, because so long now we have looked at the magnifying lens and we've brought out that magnifying lens and say, okay, I'm a neurologist.
I'm going to look at your nerves. Here's what's going on. And I'm going to look at your brain, and here's what's going on. Well, I can't figure it out. Okay, let's send you over to this other one. Okay, I'm a GI doc. I'm going to get out my magnifying lens and look in your colon or look in your stomach or whatever it is, like literally, and they'll go, well, I can't figure out what it is, or try this drug, and that doesn't work. So then go over to this other specialist and this other specialist, and all of a sudden, patients have been to 12 different places, have had the runaround, and they finally come into our office and are like, holy cow, maybe it's all in my head, like these doctors are saying, and that, or I'm just making it up, or it's really not as bad as it should be, or that I'm experiencing, whatever it is. And so instead, what we do is we're the place to start. We're the place that, you know, if you're off, you don't feel good, come here. Let's check it out. Let's figure out where those underlying imbalances. Then if it can't get it fixed, then we'll refer you out to somebody else. But the vast majority of patients that we see, we're able to take on as patients. We're able to work with them and able to get dramatic changes in things like digestion issues, brain fog, energy, thyroid problems, autoimmune conditions, all types of different issues. We're able to give the body the ability to start healing itself.
And you can help anybody really at any age. I mean, Doc, I'm shocked every time we talk and you discover how many young people have health issues.
Absolutely. We see just as many teens and 20-something-year-olds as we do 50 and 60-year-olds. And a lot of people are like, holy cow, what do you mean? Right. Well, if I see a 20, 22, 24-year-old on my schedule, first thought I have is, oh, their gut's off. They've got some digestion issue, all the way from 20 bowel movements a day to throwing up every day for a year to all types of different digestion issues. We can fix those, and we can help people heal very, very quickly from that without drugs or surgery.
So give us a couple examples or maybe a couple follow-ups on some of the patients that you've had in recently.
Yeah, I had a great one last week. He's from down a little bit south of Denver towards Colorado Springs. I saw him once in person. He came up, did our initial evaluation, our brain map and blood work and everything that we needed to do to figure out what was going on. And he was full-blown diabetic, over 300 pounds, A1C of 7.2. If anybody knows their A1C, they know that's diabetes. We went through 6 months with him, worked through step-by-step through the process, helped reverse his fatty liver, went from fatty liver numbers in the 80s down to the teens. His insulin came back into the good range. His A1C went from 7.2 down to 5.4. 5.4 isn't even pre-diabetic anymore.
Wow,
he's no longer diabetic. He lost 110 pounds in 6 months.
Wow, that's incredible. That, you know, Doc, that just changes his life, doesn't it? Just changes it.
Absolutely. I had him, I only saw him that one time, so we've done everything else over Zoom. And so I said, Stan, let me see. Stood up, his shirt looked like it was, you know, made for a giant. His pants were all like, you know, torqued around, and his belt was like, you know, holding them up barely. And I'm like, dude, you got to go get some new clothes. You look ridiculous. And he's like, well, I think I'm going to be down like another 10 or 15 pounds, so I don't want to buy anything yet until I'm down at that lowest weight. And I'm like, okay. His wife was sitting next to him. I'm like, if you guys are going to church or something, you gotta get this guy at least one good outfit, because he can't be out in public like that.
No.
But
go get some nice, you know, at Goodwill or something, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, you know, his energy is back where he wants to be. He's in his 60s, and yet he's able to hike now. He's able to bike. He's able to do all these things that he wants to do in retirement. And that's the miracles that we see all the time, all the way down to a lady up in Casper that I just talked to this week. She's in her early 40s and school teacher, and she gets tired and her digestion and just not able to function. She's adopted some kids and has her own kids and four kids total, and just run down, wore out. And yet she loves exercise, and she wanted to do a half Ironman triathlon this summer. And yet there was no way with where she was at she was going to be able to do it. And so we started working with her, got her adrenals balanced out, got her blood sugar stabilized, got her brain where it needed to be, her energy back. And she just finished 2 weeks ago, she finished her first ever half Ironman triathlon, which is, I don't even I mean, Ironman, what is that? It's a full marathon. So that's 13 miles. That's like 70-mile bike ride. That's a couple-mile swim or something. I don't know.
I'm getting exhausted just hearing you tell about it. I'm getting winded now.
You walked in from the car. That was good job.
Yeah, I did,
today.
Right? I marked that down on my, you know, on my list. You know, I was like, hey, I've accomplished something. But, man, that's amazing. So you got her in a situation to where she was just – she couldn't do anything to where she did a half of an Ironman. That's incredible.
Absolutely. And she's just all smiles, and she's happier with her kids and going to be a more effective teacher and a happier wife and nicer wife. And like they always say, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
Now
she's happy.
That's really good. So, Doc, you know, you do more than digestive problems maybe or weight loss. I mean, there was that, remember that picture you posted on the Facebook page for Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and Phoenix of that skin? Remember the hands?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll put another one up of this full body eczema that this lady recently came in with, where it's just chest and back and legs and everything. But one of the ladies came in, her hand, you know, she showed me her hands, and they're full on cracked, bleeding, itchy nonstop. And she had tried every topical thing imaginable, every dermatologist. They'd poked and prodded and rubbed and scrubbed and done everything they possibly could, and yet no change in that skin. And yet, where was it coming from? It was coming from the inside. Her digestive tract, her detoxification systems, all of these were out of balance. And so what did we do? We started from the ground floor, started stabilizing her blood sugar, working on her gut, working on her liver, her detoxification, infections, all these different things that were out of balance for her is what we need to work on. The next person might have a hand looks identical, and we have to work on a whole bunch of different things because every person is an individual. And that's the great part. And if you check out our Facebook page, Functional Medicine Center Fort Collins, we're over 40,000 viewers now, tons of information. We do videos every single day on there. And I guarantee if you jump on that page, you're going to learn something new. So get on there, ask questions, communicate with us. We answer questions all the time. We love to interact with people that way. So get on there and you're going to see that everything we're talking about is individualized, that, you know, there are reasons why. Just some of the things we were talking about discussing today, you know, each one of those might be related to somebody having belly fat or somebody having low thyroid or whatever, but not everybody that has belly fat has X, Y, and Z. They might have A, B, and C, and that's where medical systems have to be individualized. It cannot be, oh, you've been diagnosed IBS and it's constipation, so we give you this. Oop, you've been diagnosed IBS, diarrhea, we're going to give you this one. That does not work. A one-size-fits-all does not work. We know that, and you look around and you tell people that, and they're like, well, yeah, that totally makes sense. We're all unique, and so we've got to get to that underlying why.
Absolutely, and you are listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, Tennessee, and Phoenix, Arizona. And to get a hold of Dr. Ben and the gang over there, give him a call at 970-282-1173 or go to fmcenters.com. And by all means, follow him on that Facebook page, Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins. Okay, Doc, so I want to get into some of our topics. Time just flies by.
Yes.
So now
I talk fast.
I know, right? You talk fast. I kind of stumble around. But so I was thinking about, I went through the Facebook page and found topics for today. And, you know, you've got this one on here says top causes of bloating. Now, is bloating and inflammation, are they the same thing or are they two different things?
So bloating, usually what people think about when they talk about bloating, that's going to be after eating, you feel full, food just kind of sits there.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just up under the ribs. Other time, we have women all the time that say, people ask me if I'm pregnant. I get so much bigger sometimes, and it'll go like 4 or 5 inches out. They'll stick out at various points, but usually it's just, you know, food sits there and things just get expanded and just do not work like they're supposed to.
Makes sense. So what are some of the foods that cause this bloating?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the common things that we see is actually where people will eat the wrong combinations of food. And so one of the first things that we look at is proper food combining. And so a lot of people growing up in America, what do we eat? We eat meat and veggies, or meat and carbohydrates as opposed to meat and veggies. So the meat and carbohydrates would be like hamburger on a bun, turkey sandwich, bacon and toast, eggs and pancakes, you know, all these different things, spaghetti and meatballs. We are eating this combination of protein and starches. And here's what happens is neither one of those breaks down very well, and it's going to sit in the stomach too long, and it's going to start to putrefy. One of my favorite words in the English language is putrefaction. Isn't that just a great,
sounds
great word?
Awful.
So it's going to sit there too long, and we're going to potentially start getting some reflux. We're going to start regurgitating. It's going to sit in the stomach. It's not going to be broken down as well by the time it gets to the small intestine, and it's just going to sit and not flow like it's supposed to through that digestive tract. So we've got to properly combine our food. So you want to keep your proteins and your carbs separate. And so if you're eating some type of a protein for lunch, I just had chicken. I had some asparagus and some sauerkraut and a bunch of chicken on there. And so that was my lunch, as opposed to rice and pasta and some other things that are going to be heavy and sit there and cause bloating.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, tell us about stomach acid. And stomach acid equals protein. What does that mean?
Yep. So you need a lower stomach acid, meaning if we're talking about the pH scale, the lower the pH, the more stomach acid you have. So you need more stomach acid to break down protein. But if you combine it with the starches, you don't make as much. And so that protein is actually what will putrefy in there as well. And so this is why you don't want to drink fluids with your meals. You don't want to drink water or tea or whatever, maybe a couple sips, but you don't want to be drinking 8, 10, 12 ounces, or you go to the restaurant where they're refilling your iced tea and you're That's getting me. 3 or 4 iced teas. You're trying to digest your burger in iced tea.
That's not going to work. You know, I got to be honest with you. I started following that advice. Now, I'll have like a glass of water there, like if I just need to help get something down, maybe I didn't chew it right or whatever, and you get a little thirsty. But I was that guy. I was that guy that would drink like a pitcher of tea during a meal, and I've completely stopped that now. I'm lucky if I finish a half a glass of water during a meal. Just trying to follow that advice. Oh, I do. I do. Things seem to be digesting a lot better than they used to.
Yep, absolutely. So most people think about stomach acid as being bad, and they go, ooh, that's why you get reflux. And it's like, no, we need stomach acid. As we age and as we're under stress, we're producing less stomach acid. Are you doing either one of those, Dan? Aging or stripping?
I'm aging, and yes, unfortunately, really fast. Yes.
Unfortunately, most everybody in this country is
every
aging
day.
And stressing.
Yep.
Yes, I figured out the stress one pretty well. But the aging part of it, you know, it's just naturally occurring.
It does.
And that we don't produce as much stomach acid as we go through those processes. And so we've got to be able to make sure that the body has enough stomach acid, because if you don't have enough, food sits too long in your stomach and will start coming up and start pushing on that little valve. And that's when we start getting reflux and indigestion and all the issues that come with that stomach maldigestion. So you actually need stomach acid.
So then we actually make it worse when we take the antacids, thinking it's going to make us feel better, and it's actually making the situation worse.
Amen.
Oh, God. Okay, so let me ask you about food allergens. Now, food allergens, now that could be individual. I mean, everybody could be allergic to something different, right?
Absolutely. So we see all types of different things with people. Common ones: gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, some nuts, peanuts, things like that are going to be some of probably the top five most common. But, you know, it can be also individualized where, man, I just can't do tomatoes, and my, my joints get inflamed, or if you, especially when you're talking about digestion, it can be some of those salsas or red sauces or things like that can cause some irritation in the digestion. Some people, it's not even a food allergy, but if they eat a carb or starch heavy meal, like a big plate of pasta or whatever, it may not even be a gluten allergy, but they're food's just going to sit there. It's not going to digest well. It's going to ferment. They're going to create more gas and bloating down lower, and they're just going to feel really yucky through that process.
Okay. Yeah. And I see, for me, it's dairy products. I love dairy products. They don't like me.
Yep.
And so if I'm going to cheat, I'll tell myself, I know that I'm going to pay for this, but I'm going to have it, but I know it, you know. Then you can kind of, you know, before it was kind of like unexpected. I didn't know what it was, but now I know what it is.
Yep.
So if I have it, I know that, okay, it's going to last this long. I can recover and whatever, but it also keeps me from overdoing it. So like I would eat, let's say, a spaghetti meatball dinner. I love milk with that. Or, you know, Italian. I love milk with Italian. I don't know why. And I love to have ice cream afterwards. So instead, I will maybe get a really small glass of milk just so I can have that taste instead of like three or four big glasses, you know. And then if I want some ice cream, I'll have a little bit instead of, you know, five scoops. You know, it used to be to me that, you know, you just cut the half gallon thing in half and just eat the half. You know, that was how you eat ice cream.
That's why they call it a half gallon.
That's right.
So you don't have to eat the whole gallon.
Exactly.
So here's the other thing, is that in today's day and age, there's a lot of good alternatives. So even if somebody does have a gluten allergy or sensitivity, there's a lot of options out there. Even if somebody doesn't do great with dairy, if you haven't tried coconut milk ice cream, and you're some people don't like the little aftertaste of coconut, but for most people, you know, that's a great alternative. There's coconut milk yogurt. There's tons and tons of alternatives nowadays. So, you know, people don't really feel as deprived as they used to if they had to go on some kind of a different diet or take certain foods out. Now, you can get pretty much anything that you used to get, but in an alternative form as well.
Yeah, and once you get used to the taste, it really does taste good. And sometimes when you go back to the old stuff, it's way too sweet. You're like, oh, how did I ever eat this? And you know, it's
absolutely
kinda
like, and we see that all the time. People's taste buds change, and they can't go back and eat a Blizzard like they used to. It just is way too sweet.
It's just not gonna work. So I want to get into this one real quick. So my sister just texted me, and she was talking about having to wean herself off of diet soda. And so that leads us to number four on this list here, artificial sweeteners and sugars and alcohols. But let's talk about the artificial sweeteners. You know, a lot of people think that, and I'm one of them, that if I'm not having sugar, if I'm having artificial sweetener, I'm golden, I'm good, I'm not cheating. Is that true?
Yep. So here's what we're seeing. I did a video on this as well a couple weeks ago, that artificial sweeteners have been shown to irritate the gut lining, cause what's called leaky gut, throw off the microbiome, which is this whole universe of good bacteria and bad bacteria, probiotic type stuff. So the artificial sweeteners have been shown to do that. They are known neurotoxins, meaning that they're causing neurological degeneration in the brain. And the other part is that they're tricking the brain into thinking that, you know what, this is sweet, great, but it never really satisfies that. And so then people end up drinking more, still eating more sweets and craving more sweets. And the research shows, you know, I guarantee you, think about this. If Coca-Cola could have a study that shows, like, remember Subway with Jared?
Yeah.
He lost all that weight.
Yeah.
You know, if Coca-Cola had a study that goes, oh my gosh, people that drink four Diet Coca-Colas a day lose on average 50 pounds. I mean, that would be everywhere, right?
It would be. I've never seen it. Never.
You've never seen it?
No.
I mean, not even close. I mean, they don't even make claims of that. That it helps, like oatmeal, even though it's a crock, they still make a claim that oatmeal helps lower cholesterol. I've never seen it. I've seen oatmeal raise blood sugar and cause cholesterol to go up, but somehow, some way, they found a study to do that, which is a bonk study. And yet, if Diet Coca-Cola would even come up with some random study somewhere
they would be posting that, but they can't
everywhere.
Because there has never been any research showing it does that. So, but those can cause problems. Even some of the natural, and what I said there was those alcohol sugars. So, like some of the xylitols and some of these types, they can cause some gas and bloating as well. So even some of the quote unquote natural alternative, fake sweeteners are not going to be constructive for digestion either.
How about stevia? What do you know about stevia?
Yeah, stevia, if you're getting it from a good quality source, unfortunately a lot of them out there are adding in some other things that aren't very good.
Ooh.
But if you're getting a good quality, all natural, just straight stevia, that's a great place to go for sweeteners. But ultimately, you know, get rid of why somebody wants all that sweet in the first place and start changing the blood sugar, changing the digestive tract, changing all these things. And then we won't be like, oh my gosh, I need that sweet thing after dinner. It won't have to happen.
Okay. God, we are running. Okay. So I got one more quick follow-up. Somebody wanted to know on the drinking of liquids, how long after a meal do you wait before you drink?
A good rule of thumb is 30 minutes either side of the meal.
Okay, so that will keep the stomach acids intact so you can digest your food.
Yep, that'll be better. And it depends on what you're eating. If you're eating chicken, rice, and some vegetables, you know, you may even need to give it longer. But if you're just eating some chicken and vegetables, it's going to break down and move through faster. So you might be able to do it quicker on the other end.
Okay, Doc, do we have time to go through the body fat thing real quick? So you want to get rid of belly fat, top four causes. We got 2 minutes.
Yep. So when we start thinking about, belly fat, one of the number one things that we look at is what is called, it's called cortisol, and it's the main adrenal hormone. And this is basically, and I'll just have time to go through this one, cortisol, that's the common thing that people hear of when they hear of belly fat, if they're familiar with the alternative natural medicine world, functional medicine world. So if somebody is in a chronic fight or flight pattern, if they're always revved up, their brain's always worry and stress and everything, the body thinks, oh my gosh, we might be going into a long, hard winter. We might need to store some fat. And so that's what happens is the body gets tricked. It thinks, oh, we need to store fat. So let's go ahead and do that, especially around the midsection. That's an easy place to put
sure.
it for people. So first thing that you need to look at if you have belly fat is to think about your adrenal glands, to think about what's called cortisol, and start working on your stress response, taking days off, taking downtime, doing deep breathing, prayer, meditation, all these things to help quiet down that brain. So if you guys have questions about belly fat, about digestion, about autoimmune, anything at all, give us a call, 970-282-1173, and we'll jump on the phone with you, talk about the process, give you the answers that you need to feel comfortable coming to Fort Collins, whether you're coming down from Wyoming, up from Denver, wherever it is. We work with patients all over the country, 60% of our patients from out of state. We love to get people better. So give us a holler. We can help you in so many different ways and get you on your path to wellness.
Doc, this has been great. I wish we had another hour. But we'll have to meet again
Absolutely,
next week.
Dan.
All righty, man. Thank
okay,
you. You have well. A great, great weekend. Thank you. All right. You've been listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, Tennessee, and Phoenix, Arizona. Get a hold of Dr. Ben at 970-282-1173 or go to fmcenters.com. I've been your host, Dan Muir. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dan Muir and Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.
The health advice and opinions on this broadcast are those of the host and guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of this station, Crawford Broadcasting Company, its staff, management, or sponsors.